known each other for a bit in town. And I wanted to have you guys on because I recently found out you have kind of an interesting origin story of how you guys know each other, right?
Mm-hmm. I'd say it's very interesting, yeah.
Okay, so who wants to start?
Hmm.
It's fun because it's like when you ask a couple their love origin story, but it's two women and it's different anyway.
It's still a love origin story. It's a love origin story. Yeah.
But where does it begin?
To jump us in, you guys spent a whole year, because I knew you guys had done some sort of training together. I assumed it was like a retreat, like a week-long retreat. I didn't realize you lived together kind of off-grid for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yeah. There was this magical training I had heard about for years, this like off-grid midwifery school in the mountains of Spain. And I would meet really interesting people. A couple of times they were like, yeah, I went to this school and I learned these things. And it felt very intriguing, kind of like Hogwarts for conscious, empowered women. And so I went after my baby was just 4 months old. I decided to just go for it. So when she was 9 months, I started the course. So I was there in a year with my child. And I met Effia there. She's one of my first friends that kind of then became not a friend, and then we became really good friends. And it was in this beautiful space next to a river with goats. And you want to take over? Can we bounce back and forth? You want popcorn with me?
Mr. Pop, my turn. So describing the space, or maybe describing how I got there.
Well, where was it in Spain? Galicia? Or?
No, like the mountains south of Granada, Sierra Nevada.
Ah, okay. Asturias, or no?
It was in the
Extremadura?
Alpujarras.
Okay. In the southeast.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was gorgeous. And I don't know.
Wait, how did you end up there?
Okay, well, I decided that I want to know more about doulas and like the world of pregnancy, but from a different angle from like all the information I'd been hearing like throughout my life. Like, I felt like I'd really soaked up messaging that was making me super fearful. And I'd gotten to the point of like, how old was I? I don't know, 30 something. Was like, do I want to have kids? If I want to have kids, I'm going to have to be pregnant. I'm terrified of that. I'm going to have to work on it, right? It says, actually, adoption.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you want to have your own kids, you have to go through pregnancy and birth. And I realized I was terrified of it and felt like maybe it was holding me back from taking that decision.
Because of like the horror stories you hear?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Western medicine or just in general? Or any non-traditional stuff?
Non-traditional? What do you mean by traditional?
Well, I mean like natural, like the horror stories of home birth or whatever category of horror stories. I'm sure there's in every form.
I think there's horror stories all over the place. I think I mostly heard about like hospital birth and like, when I started looking into it a bit more, I learned more about home birth. So I wasn't hearing anything about home birth specifically. I just kind of soaked up these ideas that like being pregnant is uncomfortable and unpleasant and birth is even worse. So I wanted to look into what the doulas were saying because I felt like they were telling a different story about birth. I thought one way to really know about it is to do a course to be a doula. And I was looking around and I was really surprised to see how many options there were that were like 5 days long. Like a woman with no experience of childbirth or anything could go and do one of these courses for 5 days, come out and start supporting women in like pregnancy and childbirth. It's like 5 days is never going to be enough to like go through it all. And part of my like searching brought me to Duluth. Someone mentioned it. I mentioned to her that I was looking for a course to be a doula. And she's like, I know this place. And she told me about it. And like, oh my God, this is literally, it's three things that I was looking for. Escape the winter in the north. Those maybe like, they're not in order of importance. But like learn about birth.
Because you were living in the UK.
I was living in the UK at the time. And living off grid. So I was like, I applied. I was like.
What was the second thing?
So it was escaping the winter in the north, learning about doula, birth, pregnancy, and all of that, and living off-grid. Mm. So it's like, oh my God, tick, 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 yes! I applied, and I was one of the later ones to apply. I was already on the road when I applied, and then like went straight there. I was like, please. It was great.
That's such an interesting like approach. I think I remember you mentioning this in one of the first weeks that we were there in school several years ago. Because for myself, it was sort of the opposite, where I came from the world of like scary mainstream beliefs around pregnancy and birth. And then in my travels, I've been traveling around for probably 8 years at that point. And meeting actually the first women that I met in like the south of Spain, they had birthed their babies in the mountain in their hand-built homes by the fire on the ground of their home with their partners there to like support them and catching their own babies in their hand. Like just these incredibly powerful stories that I had no idea that our bodies can do this and that we have this power within us. And along the way, different eco-villages and alternative communities and meeting just individuals that have this experience of their own bodies and not just birth, but also like menstruation and like the magic and the wisdom of their bodies. And so that kind of brought me back to the Alpujarras, and it brought me to this course. So it was kind of a different like direction. Yeah, that's cool.
And was the goal to become midwives at the end, or doulas, I guess, at the end of it?
That wasn't my goal personally. For me, I really wanted to work on my own fears. And then I could imagine afterwards, like once I have this feeling inside, I'm just naturally going to be sharing it. But I didn't go into it thinking that I would then like to officially work in that field. But since then, it's been different.
Kind of at the opposite thing again. I thought that I would be a doula after giving birth to my own baby and like experiencing that firsthand. And then,
were you in the hospital or home?
Yeah, home.
Okay.
In my own hands, like feeling her head come down and down and up and down and down, and then baby. Wow. That's the simplified version of the story. It was just like that. but actually having a baby, I realized like the idea of attending births for 24 hours, 12 hours, 48 hours straight is like, I just don't have the support system when she was a baby or even now as a three-year-old to support other women in their journeys. But I came out of it with just like a super in-depth skill set and knowledge around supporting women and wellness in general. I feel like midwifery is not just about being there for birthing women. It's just like, it's reproductive health. It's women's health in general. So that's also what this year was like training us for. Mm-hmm. And I say Hogwarts because it's like tapping into this inner magic. Would you say it was kind of magical?
Absolutely. I feel like the kind of essence of Hogwarts magic is a little bit different from the magic that was present in our school. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely magical. And I heard many people liken it to Hogwarts. Especially because we were all living there. We were living there and going to school like in this, like, I don't even know what like space radius it would be. But it was kind of intense, like Hogwarts is. Definitely had Hogwartsy vibes.
But you're going to describe the vagina. You have to enter the doorway. Right? Wasn't it literally like legs?
And all of us.
Get past the labia. Yeah. Okay. Wait, so you basically don't leave this place for a year?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
No, you don't. You can. Like, it's not like you have to stay. But pretty much, like, I think the reality is most of us, like, stayed there the whole time, basically.
Wow. And then did you find it hard to adjust back into the real world?
Well, I remember when, it was a bit strange. Like, I want to say that we still were in contact with, like, some parts of the outside world. Like, it wasn't only the students at the school. Like, in the community that we lived in, there were other people who were not part of the school. And then there was a wider community where there were also people. So it wasn't just the students. We were very much connected to the outside world in certain ways. But at the same time, we were quite isolated in a way. And certainly in a bubble. I would call it a bubble. So leaving the bubble was really intense. Like, because it was like high COVID times as well. So leaving the bubble kind of meant a big shift in the reality in many ways.
Wait, so COVID happened while you were in the bubble?
Like 6 months before bubble.
Oh, okay. So you escaped it a little bit to go in the bubble.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even our extended community, like outside of our living situation in the school that we were in, it was like wizards and witches as well. Like it was just, people involved and like, just homeopathy, different ways of healing, growing their own food and making their own medicines and like community and gatherings and a lot of bonfires and ceremonies.
Yeah. Cool. Wait, so why'd you leave?
People love to ask this question. Mm-hmm. I get this regularly when I tell a story of like, I was in this crazy, like amazing.
Because it actually place. Sounds like, oh, that's kind of like, kind of how I want to live. So
yeah, well, mm-hmm. I can give you, you know, how to get there. You know, it's a, when you say, how is it like entering that space and leaving it? That it felt like coming home to me because I before that I was living at my child's in-laws' house, and it just for me having like modern lifestyle feels a bit more disconnected, and I had been living this way off grid and mirrors mm-hmm. and houses and teepees and things for years, and so it felt like such a relief. Finally, my baby and I had our own home, like that felt really resonant to the way I like to live, like chop wood, carry water lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Although it was harder with the baby for sure. Mm-hmm. And then coming out of it, yeah, I mean, I came here. So it's also.
Oh, yeah. So a form of thought, because, like, all right, so something Nalaya and I talk about a lot is that the isolation of modern life is the hardest on women, right? Men kind of do, are still kind of the same in lifestyle evolutionarily, but like a one woman home with a baby or multiple babies is very artificial. Mm-hmm. Like just like to not be able to hand your baby to someone. Mm-hmm. It's just like so crazy. But did you, with all these women around, could you just hand your baby to someone when you're having a rough moment?
You know, it's a sensitive topic actually. I thought it would be that way. I actually felt really isolated and abandoned, and like that the community was really painfully unsupportive for a lot of, like, for it to be a space of midwife, like people training in midwifery, mm-hmm. Because they were going through their own journeys as well. They were going through mm-hmm. like deep transformations, and they really needed their own time to process. So I can really understand that, but it felt surprising to me and very challenging. Effie was one of the people that was really there and was really close with Sara and me. She was just like my best friend, and Sara called me Mama and her Mamia, which is really sweet.
That's so cute.
Love story continues.
Does she still call you Mamia? Yeah?
She doesn't.
Oh.
No, like, so after I left, like, you stayed a little bit longer, and we didn't see each other until, like, was it a year and a half, two years? I don't think it was 2 years later. Year and a half later?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was long enough. No, she was super tiny mm-hmm. for her not to, like, I had to rebuild that again when I saw her. But she did used to call me Mamia, and melted my heart. She's still super sweet, even though she doesn't call me Mamia. It feels good, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it made us realize, like, I've never been close with my, certainly not my extended family, but even not really my parents or sibling, but just having people, because, like, the thing is with even in any temporary community, even, like, good friends, you can't really count on someone to be there to take your baby, right? Like, everyone's got their own lives. We're all kind of living our own directions. Even in our community here, we're friends, but, like, we might leave. People are always in and out.
Yeah.
So, like, kind of, you know, blood is maybe the only thing that you can count on will still exist, you know?
I don't know.
I think for many people it's not that way.
Yeah, and yeah. Different communities. And, you know, we were kind of a fresh community. Every year it recycles new people.
Mm-hmm.
There were a handful of people that were really beautifully supportive, but like regular, consistent help of being a single mom is just, I can't imagine. Like, I think people really need grandmothers and aunties around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So actually, I do have a question. All right. So this is something I've been thinking about partly because I have a daughter and I haven't really thought about women's experience that much until having a daughter, but then obviously married, whatever, is that, so in the men's world, one of the big things, you know, like you've probably heard of nice guy syndrome, like boys are raised to be a certain way, but it's almost exactly the opposite of what women actually appreciate in men. And a lot of men get upset about it because they're following what they were told, and they find out. Is this new?
Well,
let's start here.
Yeah.
Let's start here.
Is
okay.
this a thing?
It's a common thing in men's personal development.
It's like a Disney roots?
Feminism is blamed more, specifically third wave feminism.
Okay, please
right?
go on.
Okay, so this is, all right, backing up before I, setting the ground for this next question. This is common in the men's, it's kind of like one of the almost cliche stereotype things that it's like the label of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's boys, particularly millennials. Gen Z has their own thing with Tinder and internet porn. It's like another version of it. But millennials grew up in the 90s, third wave feminism, all about women, basically being a little bit more masculine, successful. Many emasculating ideas given to young boys about being nice, about being nice, being sweet, being there to empower women, not mansplaining, all the memes. Mm-hmm. These, you know, given at a young enough age, I guess taken as like a dogma. The kid goes through puberty, finds out no women find him attractive when he's like that. Right? And then it's the guys who did the opposite who are bad, who women actually like. And then this is kind of like the jarring thing for a lot of young men. It's just bringing
your
up
face,
something.
You get excited. You're like, bad man. That's not my excitement. I'm interested. I feel like maybe it's interesting to hear this point of view, because I feel like there's still the story on like the women's side that men aren't nice enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. The idea here is that you're only looking at men who you would even consider as a partner or lover or something, whereas 80% of men you wouldn't even consider. It would be kind of a joke, or it's like the nice boy who you don't even think of as a man. Like, it would be a joke if he asked you out. This is actually a majority of men. You're only looking at the viable candidates, half of whom are mean. Agree, disagree? No.
It just feels like a very different realm of like knowing people. I'm like, wait a minute. So my candidates, the mean ones and the nice ones, and then the 80% of the men that are squishy.
Yeah, because they are so nice, and they don't have any other attractive qualities to say. Like, they're not good looking enough to make up for the fact that they're a pushover.
Go on. I mean, I guess I don't perceive in that like way of the spectrum that you've described, but I will say that for me, it's like, because I just met some people recently, and it was really interesting and intriguing to have this like really nice guy connection with someone that hugs like you're, you know, mm-hmm. cuddling a cloud for a moment. And then another guy that's kind of like a dude and a builder, but also very kind. Mm-hmm. So nice is like polite, but really the essence that's important for me is like compassionate, kind, sensitive in the sense of like checking in, being able to read things. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in like a scared way of like, mm-hmm. not being able to speak themselves, but there is an important quality for me for men, and it does feel and look phallical. Like, there's this like showing up, I'm present, and I like being able to surrender into my femininity.
Is it phallical?
I even had a hair gesture. Highlight. Because really, it is this like, I'm showing up, I know what I want, I'm going for it. Like, I want to connect with you, and even self-aware to the point of like, I'm not fully committing to something, but I would like to get to know you sincerely. And this is what I have to offer. And I know myself. So there's a self-knowing. There's like in his power, which doesn't necessarily look like weightlifting, but that's nice too. Physical health is a good thing. But really the essence is more like knowing themselves and their confidence, like connected to what they love. And then a sensitivity, like a receptivity. So it's not just, I'm big, do you like me? It's like, I'm present with you. I'm clearly attracted. Like, I'm direct about how I feel and what I want. And I'm interested in listening. Like, there's a reception. So those, I don't know. Maybe there's more things on this importance.
Yeah. I think like really simplifying and generalizing is like a guy could be powerful or not powerful. If he's not powerful, it's just like the perception is women don't even see such a guy. And then if he's powerful, he can choose to use it in a kind way or in a not kind way.
What do you mean by powerful?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of just summarizing what you said. Like he has that
straight.
Yeah, like he's phallical.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hard and very
phallical.
Themselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like he's not a pushover. He's not, you know, he's someone that you would want to be around.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Whereas, you know, most people in general are like, you know, NPCs. I'm going into like manosphere nerd terminology.
My notebook out?
Yeah.
Manosphere. What does that mean? NPC. Please, we need a glossary.
All right. Going a different direction that I thought was cool. That is a character in a video game that stands for non-playable character.
Yes.
So it's like someone who just is an automaton rather than...
They only have like a line.
And then, you know, most people you interact with in your everyone's subjective reality, most people are kind of NPCs. Like, they're just transactional. They don't really have a person behind them.
I
know women don't look at the world this way, but this is how we talk on the internet. We are the representative government. Anyway, yeah, exactly.
For me, it's really interesting to hear you kind of highlight like this like non-powerful and then powerful in two different ways. Mm-hmm. And then maybe seeing for the first time the potential of like all the people I'm not seeing have something in common that I'm just not seeing. Because, and maybe you're right. It sounds like you're saying that women like basically pay attention to the powerful men, and then are attracted to, I don't know, maybe one more than the other or both, but the non-powerful ones just don't even get looked at. And I think that's what was the most surprising to me, because I feel like I'm aware of everybody in a certain way. And then, but I'm thinking maybe it's true that there are just men that I don't even really like.
Well, I think your sexual love, potential partnership, screening mechanisms don't even consider them.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I feel like you're a special person. I think that there's special women, and I think this is the kind of woman that heartful men should be interested in. Like, you're a good example for me as someone that really sees a lot of different people in their shape and form and the way they speak. And you give them, I wouldn't say you give them a chance, but you're like, there's an openness for you to connect. Mm-hmm. And you're more excited to connect with them when they're like engaging with you. You know, that like this other guy before I wasn't so interested in chatting with, but you're like, that person was so interesting.
Oh.
They were like, on the outside, it wasn't particularly like, you know, I didn't find this person sexy, but the vibe that you were describing them, I was like, oh, wow, I want to hang out with this person too. Let's have a chat with them again. Let's go hang out.
So you have a wider aperture than Reese, let's say, letting humans in to your world.
I don't know.
Is that fair?
I don't know.
Different aperture.
If that is true, oh, go ahead.
No, I don't know.
If that is true, I wonder, this kind of goes into the question I was originally going to ask, does it get you into trouble at all where, I don't know, I'm just generalizing, I don't know your dating lives, but like, whereas Reese might reject someone who actually would turn out to be cool, which, do you get more false positives? Like, do you find yourself saying yes, giving a chance to people who maybe shouldn't have a chance?
And now I'm like, a chance for what? Are we talking
being together in some form, whatever level of relating?
I can definitely, there are some people, like in general, I like to say like no regrets, but I have had like a couple of experiences where I'm like, I could have done without that one. Mm-hmm. Like, not.
Was also like, you know, we don't have infinite time as human beings, like to spend a lot of time with someone who doesn't really jive with you or what you want in a relationship or something, you know?
Hmm.
I'm asking because I've done kind of both where I've, most of my adult life, I think, I'm not pointing to you,
I'm
just actually
why,
true.
I'm like, please.
Where I've been like very quick to like, all right, no, next, like I'm looking for deal breakers, whatever. But then when I was just speaking about this in another episode, when I decided I wanted a partner, I let in a lot of people into my life that I probably shouldn't have, and I should have listened to my older instincts. And I was just curious.
I have something to say about that. I think that your question comes from an assumption that like, when people come in, they like give something specific. Like either you weren't looking to settle down and you were like, or I don't know, I can't, hang on, let me think. As when I asked, like, wait, I'm a bit lost, but I'm gonna catch up. I just need to find the words that you used. You asked, do I just get myself in trouble? Like, I find someone who doesn't, what did you say?
Jive.
Okay, it doesn't jive. So, like, that's assuming that I'm looking for something specific.
Ah, okay.
I'm just kind of open to experience what comes with people.
Yes.
Fair
so,
enough.
Like,
yes,
I'm not, like, when I'm letting someone in, I'm not, like, I either want them to be my boyfriend or girlfriend, or I don't want them to be that. I'm just like, who's this person? What are they like?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't gotten to the point where I've said, now I'm looking for a partner. I want this. And so I'm screening people in that way for that reason. I'm just kind
Fair
of
enough.
Seeing what comes up between people.
Maybe that's the better answer, because I got into trouble when I was like, okay, the next person I spend significant time with will be the mother of my children. And then I was, you know.
Instead of experiencing them, there was some kind of like, you were hoping that they would fit into a box and like.
Well, not a box. I mean, you know, but a certain kind of role in my life.
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas before I was happy to be super, just like, let's experience something. It might last a day. It might last a couple months. Probably not more. It's like.
Was it the vibe you were in or when you met your partner?
The first time we met, yeah.
Cool.
Which is why we didn't connect, I think, which I think I was telling you the other day at the barbecue. Like, yeah, just like she had basically decided to stop fucking around metaphorically and literally.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not in that phase. So like, we couldn't even, like, I didn't even know how to flirt with her. Like, I couldn't even, I thought she was beautiful. I thought she was cool, but I didn't even know. Like, I was so, if you look at our Instagram exchanges, it's so dry because I didn't know what to say to her. Yeah.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys learned about nice guy syndrome. But now, unless you have more to say or ask.
I feel like
or,
there was a, you want to say something.
Well, you know, something stood out to me when you were describing, what was it?
All of your hand gestures.
I was wondering if there was like, should I just put the hand? Okay, then I'm just going
to
bring
my I've been hands. Able to just be clip shows.
And whatever. there were some things that, like, what was it? Maybe we can move. I don't think we can rewind in our memories of things, but there was like a moment, your head was here, you said something specific. I was trying to tickle something to bring it back, and it just...
Well, if you think about it, if you remember.
Well, we might circle back.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so my original question before explaining this manosphere stuff was, all right, I had that realization, I mean, it's often talked about in the men's personal development world. Now you guys know. I realize now, having a daughter and thinking more about a woman's experience, there's a female version of this, which I think has gone through different phases. Whereas at one, if you go all the way back, all right, women were expected to be a certain traditional role. That was one thing. But then basically in the West, women are not constrained to that anymore, not by the culture as a whole. Now there's an opposite kind of thing of women being, you know, to really generalize, women being masculine, taking on traits that used to be reserved for men in traditional society and being rewarded for that in schools, in relationship, on Instagram. And then I've been noticing women who are close friends of mine finding out that that gives you a lot of validation when you're a young woman, but it's not what now men want. It's kind of the opposite of nice guy syndrome. It's not actually what men want when it comes time to commit. They're happy to sleep with the woman who does all these things, but commitment is vulnerable for men, so they only want to commit to a certain kind of trait. And I've been thinking about this a lot because now I have a daughter. I want her to grow up empowered, but I also want her to have a happy relationship.
Oh, I know the secret sauce to this one.
Okay.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah. Is it a hand gesture? This is what you learned in Hogwarts.
Spells. No, this is what I learned on my journey of my, I mean, still learning, yeah, but this is...
Opening.
That's learning.
Yeah. No! Yeah. yeah. No, this is, I mean, I also have a daughter who's 2 years older than yours,
mm-hmm.
Which makes me an expert. Apparently, people are like, tell me advice about being a mother. I'm like, whoa, I know she's only three, but that's a lot of days and hours of life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really encourage Sada to be physical and powerful and feel herself and be aware of what's safe and not safe. And she's very good at knowing her body. I really encourage her to speak up when something doesn't feel good. And like, when it does feel good, to ask for what she wants and to ask with kindness and presence, not whine for it, not scream for it, but yes, be clear. So I would say the secret sauce is being connected to self-care. I think if we know how to nurture ourselves, that what we are is soft, gentle, feminine, beautiful, and strong. And I think there's roles. I don't really know what Instagram's proposing to, like, you know, what's out there for young women and children and such. But I think that the fear of being like wrongly masculinated in the insert words.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's no worry when we encourage our children and ourselves to be self-connected and self-honest. I think if we really can know ourselves and know how to feel good in ourselves, like, you know, I mean, Sada, she loves getting dressed. She wears her own clothes. She's really girly. She loves princessy things. And she also likes dinosaurs and jumping off of high things and wrestling her guy friends. Like, I think she's going to grow up to be a fireball or whatever terms the guys use these days for hot women. I feel like you know a bunch of them. I see on your face.
I don't know.
Okay.
I was trying to think of a 50s term, but I couldn't think of one.
So that would be my
cat's pajamas.
Yeah. The cat's pajamas.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, and I guess this is the error of culture in every direction, is that it's detracting us from our nature.
Yes.
And it sounds a little cliche, but, you know.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, that was the issue with traditional, let's say, what we could call oppression of women, that it didn't allow them range. But now I guess the culture swung the other way, where maybe it doesn't also, like a young woman who wants to be a stay-at-home mom gets kind of the shame that a woman who wanted to go to work got 70 years ago.
Yeah. I think, returning to nature, like encouraging reconnection and to their own feelings and truth and preferences. I think in that there's a diversity of expression that isn't necessarily feminine or masculine, but it's like a beautiful woman. She'll grow up to be a beautiful woman in herself.
My first thoughts was that there's something for everyone and not everyone wants the same thing. And so like even the women that you kind of described as being the ones that are more masculine now, like there are going to be men who respond to that and want that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as in, I don't really understand the picture that you're painting. So like, I understand what you're saying about like the woman from before, like the oppressed woman who like had to stay at home and make babies so that the family line could continue. And everything that comes with that, which is really yucky. But like, so how do you see the modern woman these days, and how is that unattractive to men these days?
The woman who, say, like stereotypically works in corporate and does
okay.
Is that?
But I'm not sure. I'm asking.
Oh, okay. Well, I was asking you back. Okay. But yeah, okay.
That seems like maybe like an extreme version.
Yeah, I chose the extreme. But so I see a lot in the, you know, culture for most of our lives, I assume we're about the same age, has progressively gone leftward for inclusivity and rights and all that stuff. And I'm seeing a lot. And obviously my Instagram is curated and not representative of what's going on in the world, but I think I'm pretty tapped into culture, is that both men and women are like re-embracing traditional values that maybe have been demonized. And for the man's side, I know this pretty well, of like, oh yeah, men used to get rewarded for being androgynous, and the reality of intersexual relationships between men and women, at least, is not that, right? That's the nice guy stuff. Whereas on the women's side, I'm realizing too, is like women get heavily rewarded for traits that the typical hetero guy is not attracted to. And I was like, oh, that equally sucks for women. And it's equally confusing, I think, for, let's say, young women growing up and I think all of these things kind of detract a person from their nature and make it harder for them to feel what they want, to your point. Whatever it was.
Go back to your nature, guys.
I think that culture can really get in the way of people feeling themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a tendency towards people on like an executive path or a physician path or a law path where you have to study and focus and train and do so much that you literally go through trauma, like on the path of your profession, where it literally, like, I mean, I know this from, you know, stories of doctors and personal stories of theirs and what they've been through. And I think when you have to push so hard in your career to get to where you want to be, and the path itself is damaging, like you have to repress your own needs and desires and feelings. And so like, you know, if you're, for example, if, you know, we bleed monthly, most of us bleed monthly, like most of the women of us bleed monthly, the womb carriers, and to be able to soften during these times and really listen inwards leads to a very sensual person, you know, to have that like monthly practice or way of just self-connection. It doesn't even have to be like a ritual that someone carries, but a self-awareness of oneself means like knowing how to be soft with ourselves. It's like a monthly practice of checking in and listening and slowing down. And when we don't do that, there can be like huge PMS and aggression. But if you have to push through these times of the month and of your life regularly, where you're kind of just like abusing yourself. And then you get out of that, you're powerful, but you had to get that by denying yourself care. Then it's just not going to be a very enjoyable partner. Mm-hmm. I think that goes also with men. Like if you're so strong and push and you work so hard that you lose your ability to feel yourself, you're not going to be able to feel a woman. And that being able to feel is what makes something delicious, the capacity to fall in love, like to be able to be connected to your emotions. Gosh, people are dating here with like such low emotional capacity, like the ability to feel.
Here being Earth or
right here in the No, like I think what I'm seeing, and even in people that talk about meditation and mindfulness, like I meet these people, I date these people, and I experience that they don't have a capacity for their own feelings. Like if they feel triggered, they just have to be like, I can't feel these feelings. I have to work and live and do things, versus like, oh, I know how to be with myself and recenter myself. So taking responsibility for your own emotions and your own needs, and like being able to emotionally regulate yourself, leads to a healthy partner. She did a
this
gesture.
Is a Mexican head nod, but is your finger? It means yes.
Also can be.
It's sorry. Different. So the Hogwarts place, the Hogwarts-like school that I was in, was very female-centric. And one of the things I learned just from observing, it wasn't even a lesson I got, was that so much of how we view empowerment in culture is a purely male version of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and then like women, this is actually one of my big criticisms of recent iterations of feminism, is like it's teaching empowerment still from a male perspective. I actually think it's like one of the most ironic things about feminism. It's teaching women to be empowered the way men are empowered.
Interesting.
As opposed to recognizing something that's not common in culture, but it's kind of related to what you're saying, that a woman has so much influence over people and events and things in a not topping. I mean, we use sexual terms. So it's like not topping, but bottoming. It's like you can get people to do a lot of things if you make it feel good, which is kind of like the woman's way of, you know, stereotypically woman's way of doing things, which is something even I mean, recognizing power dynamics, even as a guy, like if you get pulled over by the cops, you better bottom. If you try to top a cop, you're getting arrested. But if you really want, I'm not gonna do my impression of how I get out of tickets, but like if you really are soft, yeah, exactly. It's a different kind of gesture. But if you make him feel good, and you show respect, and you make him feel like he's the man, and make him feel good to be nice to you, it's way more likely he'll be nice to you. But if you try to challenge a cop, he's gonna smush you down, because that's the role he's in. It's like a hyper masculine power role, obviously.
Wow. I feel like often you're presenting these like dichotomies, and I'm realizing that I don't see things that way. And like, so it's kind of jarring for me to hear even the term like topping and bottoming, especially as it's like, you know, they're so like laden with connotations. But it's an interesting way of viewing it. So let me just try and like shift into that a sec. So you were basically saying that like, the woman way of doing things, the female way of doing things, is bottoming, and like that's how they influence. So you're going from the bottom rather than from the top, like not trying to take a position of like hierarchy, like I'm the boss, but more subtly trying to enact change by, it sounds like you're saying, by like being nice to them and making people feel good.
Well, making it feel, I mean, so the cult I was in took this to an extreme where they would make it feel really good for people to do exactly what they wanted when it came to things that maybe they didn't want to do. So it could be as forceful as what men do. It's just a different angle.
I'm just fascinated.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, all right. Switching a little, it's like, if you look at a lot of the patriarchal cults, a lot of them involve physical coercion. But the matriarchal cults never do. Like, women don't influence each other that way. I guess some can, but like, it's not as natural.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I think it's very much a part of the reality. I guess there are just certain parts of reality that I try not to focus on. I'm like, that doesn't enter into my version of reality, but it totally is there. And we were actually talking about something really similar to that recently, which is to do with, yeah, it's to do with exactly that. Like, we know how to do that. We're trained as women. We grow up as women. Like, we know how to, what you call bottom people, like
sweeten.
Yeah, like sweeten them, like, and make people feel good to get them to do what we want. It's true.
I see my kid is a year and 3 months old, and she already pulls the strings a little bit. It's like, this is going to be dangerous when you're older.
Yes.
So you guys learned recently about nice guy syndrome. I kind of assumed that it was a globally cultural known thing, just because it's in my world.
We do that a lot. But I had heard the word like nice guy and like understood that it was seen to be a bad thing. But I think I saw it as something from the like further in the past. Like, it wasn't still a thing.
We've eradicated nice guys. No. They're all dead.
No. I mean that, like, there's more of an appreciation again for nice guys.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's the bubble that I find myself in. I think, because this is also something that I've been finding interesting here in how you, like, compartmentalize and then like talk about these dichotomies, like it's either this way or that way, which I absolutely do all the time too. Like Reese is really good at like suggesting an alternative viewpoint. I'm like, oh yeah. In that I feel like there are bubbles. There are bubbles of like culture where maybe nice guys really are appreciated. And I feel like I've lived in those bubbles and but maybe not everybody does. Maybe generally over.
Well, I was speaking more specifically that whether a culture rewards a nice guy behavior or not, when it comes to like women's attraction to men, it just doesn't fit. And that's the disappointment or upset that men raised that way find out later when they start dating. It's like, oh, it's the opposite of what mommy told me to be. Like women want the opposite. Like actually, I mean, I didn't say this before. It's like, I've been in like, you know, sex education workshops or BDSM workshops where there's like this trope of a couple that shows up, usually, you know, very liberal, feminist. They both are like on the same page, everything. Like the guy is like really pro women's empowerment. And then they've been together 5-10 years and she doesn't want to sleep with him anymore. And she's like, well, I want you to dominate me. And he's like, what? Like this is the opposite. Like for 30 years, I've been getting a different message. And I feel the heartbreak. And so like, I feel bad for like a 15-year-old who realizes this, but I really feel bad for a 35-year-old who finds out because, like, his whole life has been a lie in a sense when it comes to dating.
Okay, when it comes to dating, good. Yeah. I was gonna say because, like, to make that someone's whole life, I think is misleading. His life is about so much more than just like how you have sex with another person.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, we were just bringing this up in that like culture can do anything. But nature is kind of, like, coming back to nature, I want to ask you guys again, because it was a good topic to speak about. Like, when there's conflicting messages, let's say to young women, what do you do? That was the question I had before.
Well, I was a bit confused actually hearing you guys talk back and forth. I'm like, wait, okay, let me do a bridge within myself. So, like, nice guy syndrome is not the same as kindness and being helpful and present. It's like more of a polititudinessness. And that's kind of annoying. No one wants to be like, oh, would you like me to go deeper? And you're like, yeah, bang me. So it's, you know, it's coming from this place of maybe being not fully connected, but having a default of just, I'm going to be nice. So it's not just romantic. It's like how to show up in all realms of like, oh, do you want to order? Like, what do you want? You know, versus like, I don't know. I mean, I think that's actually a thoughtful question. You should order your own food.
Yes, but lying.
Yes. But the way that things are framed in and out of it being romantic or not, I think there's like kindness, helpfulness, presence, and like just polititudes, just more of like a cultural
or blanket. Surface level or empty. Yeah. You know, I gave you guys the suggestion earlier, like, a man could be potent or impotent or powerful or not powerful. And if he's impotent, you don't even look at him. And then of the potent men, there are guys who are kind and there's guys who are not. And you were saying how, I guess, in the more women's world, there's maybe a concern that there's not enough kind men. You said something
that
like
is, that. That is something that I said. I was still trying to understand what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before I think you'd like given this like really quite simple map to follow.
So that this decision tree? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do still stand by that. I feel like I hear many, not necessarily women say to me to my face, but like sometimes, but like this, for me, it feels like there's this idea out there that like men are too masculine. Like this idea of masculinity.
Or domineering.
Of like, maybe domineering. See, like what?
Or insensitive.
Like those kind of things. And like there's not enough of men who like sit and really like listen to you and hear you and make time for you to speak and really, really kind of sit there with you and share with you.
Yeah. It's just in the men's development world, there's tons of men who are so willing to do that, but they're missing this other quality, which disqualifies them.
Yes.
And they find out that being really kind and sweet doesn't matter if you don't hit certain bases.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a self-developmental place, like knowing yourself, knowing what you stand for, your values, what you actually want. If you just show up and you're nice and you're hoping to sleep with someone, I think a lot of women can smell that, you know? But if you're showing up and you're kind and respectful and you know, even if it's like, I'm not looking for a relationship, but I'm looking to have a really meaningful and powerful sexual connection with you, like, then it's like, cool, I know what you're asking for. You're not being sneaky. And that sounds delicious. That's, you know, it comes from a place of, for me, self-knowing. And I think it's nice to be wrapped in packages of kindness and respect. But even if someone's like, no, I can't even think of the other example. Like, I'm like thinking of brute,
it's like, no. Go straight to gorilla. That's the opposite.
I feel like gorilla is also not the vibe, but you know, but I think that self-connection, and even if someone is not fully realized, they haven't been to like meditation trainings, but they know themselves and they're doing work on themselves and like recognizing their own stuff. That's such an attractive quality. Like they can maybe have had these mommy issues, and why are you still calling your mother mommy? And like,
take that bottle out of your mouth. Yeah. Like, it's not sexy.
No, well, like, but the nice guy quality, if someone recognized, hey, I because of the trauma I've gone through or whatever culturing I've gone through, I have this insecurity that I have to act this way. And I'd like to just be more authentic. And I'm trying to recognize moments where I act like that. And that's attractive. Even if someone's going through like nice guy issues, if they're like recognizing that they're not being fully authentic. For me, authenticity and yes, like being in their
phallical self.
Self. Because I don't think manliness looks necessarily like, I'm going to take you home. Like it's not that. It's not this like direct, like, sup, baby. It's like, you know, it's like there's a receptivity there as well, but they're in their own power. They're in their own center. They know themselves and they know what they want and they're honest about it. Mm-hmm. Because I think we can smell manipulation and dishonesty, or like, oh, I'm looking for, you know, my wife as well, but they're not right now. You can kind of feel like they're shaky. Maybe they mean it, but they're actually lying to themselves to some degree. Yeah. And I feel like I've always been able to feel it at first, and I kind of ignore it because they say something different. Mm-hmm. And so then afterwards I'm like, what an asshole. Like, what a not nice guy. And they were trying to be nice and they meant it, but they weren't self-aware enough. So they kind of hurt.
All right. I have more questions for the manosphere from you.
Yes.
Oh, were you going to say something?
I have a lot of things to say about everything. Okay. Then you can ask the questions. Yeah. I just really agree with what you're saying. And I think you've done a really good job of finding the bit that was missing when we were talking, like the kind of middle ground between this idea of these two polarities that they can't meet, but like where they meet is where you can be kind. And so all the things you were saying, I totally agree with that. And then about like being able to smell this, like you can, I think I don't know if all women can do this, and I think maybe men can do it too, but there's a feeling from the other person and it doesn't match. It doesn't make sense. So you said we can smell it, and I agree.
Authenticity pheromones.
Maybe.
You learned that in Hogwarts.
Before, yeah. Just from living life. Like,
right.
But the thing is that makes it confusing is that you know something's up, but you can't tell what it is. Like, it comes across as like,
yes,
it's not quite right. Something's not matching. What they're saying doesn't make sense. It doesn't match their actions, but it's not so easy to say exactly what it is until at the end. And like, oh, they didn't actually mean that. It wasn't true for them, but it comes off, like we can sense it. Like, particularly, I was thinking of one example of a man who really just wants a girlfriend right now. I can, like, he talks about it. He brings it into the conversation, like, randomly. So it's like, I can see that it's really at the forefront of his mind. And for me, it feels unfortunate for me. I feel sad for him looking at him because we can see it. And it's not attractive. Like, if you're just at the point where you're just like, I really, really, really want to have a girlfriend, like, it's hard to make a woman feel special in that, because they'll see that you just want a girlfriend. Like, maybe I'm just slotting into the space that they have for woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean they're not really interested in who I am really deep inside.
Mm-hmm.
You can really smell that. If you say smell, I don't know what sense it is.
But, probably smell.
I first of all, I had this image of being like, when you're like, he's just inserting it randomly into conversations, like, hey, pass this off. Do you know anyone that you can set me up with? It's like, whoa, what? But like, this seeking of just a girlfriend is different than being like, I want to find my queen. I know what I want. I know what I have to give and what my value is. And I would like to find that person that can walk this path with me. That's really attractive. Because it's kind of a similar words, change it out a little bit, but there's a different intention there. And it also comes with a different kind of degree of self-knowing. Mm-hmm. Because if it's just like, I really want a girlfriend, I really want to be loved, is different than, yeah.
That what you're saying is like a person who's like comfortable in themselves, yes, and they're whole in themselves versus someone who feels like they're missing something and they want to complete themselves with another person.
Phallic, flaccid. It's that. It's true. Because it's like, I want a girlfriend. It's like squishy. You're like, I don't want the squishy. But if it's like, I want my queen, mm-hmm, I know what I want and what I have to give. They know themselves. And it's like, I want you to be my king too. You know, it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a difference. Yeah.
You were speaking before, like, I couldn't connect with my now wife before because I was in...
You're flaccid.
Well,
like in this new,
my commitment erection was soft. Yes,
you were in yourself.
Okay,
it wasn't meant to be.
Anyways, yeah, we were able to connect only when I was in that. I should also want to say, like, it's making me think of what you said earlier of like my wife can tell when I'm upset. Obviously, when I don't, if I don't, even if I'm trying to keep it to myself or whatever, she almost never can guess why. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be hard anyway, but like sometimes what she assumes it is wrong, but she knows exactly the feeling. Mm-hmm. She just can't, like, always, you know, she's not psychic.
Yeah.
Sometimes her guesses are so off though, but she can tell when I'm upset.
Not everyone can, I realized. I was in a relationship recently and he said that his ex-partner could not tell when he was upset. So he could just play happy in the relationship, but he really wasn't.
Was she on birth control?
No, she just had a baby, so hormones were off. But I think she was kind of generally disconnected from it anyway.
It was a semi-joke. But then, you know, the thing where birth control messes up your pheromone receptors.
Oh, you couldn't smell it.
Yeah. Have you heard this?
No.
It seems relevant for you
guys.
It's like, because like there's this thing where, there's this experiment called the sweaty t-shirt experiment.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of this?
Yes.
Yeah, women smelled like the sweaty t-shirts of men and could like perfectly, by smell, pick their perfect genetic match. Mm-hmm. Based on whatever, but if they're on birth control, they couldn't. Mm-hmm. They just like lost that. And then they're finding a lot of married couples get together when they're on birth control. She gets off the pill, smells him for the first time, and they're not a match, and she doesn't want to sleep with him anymore.
It's an unfortunate experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know when I came off the pill, I didn't bleed for years, and I know my connection to it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
tell this glowing microphone in case you had any doubts.
Yeah, they don't tell you. That was the first thing I asked. I'm like, are there any side effects? Like, not at all. I studied for so long. And I'm like, oh, great, birth control. But then I had my period. There were a lot of, I've heard lots of stories from women that were on birth control for a while, got off of it, had terrible experiences in their hormones or didn't bleed for years But what I experienced, so I didn't bleed for several years. And the process of getting my bleeding back was not just like time. It was really like actively reconnecting with myself and the moon, but like working with my voice, with my body, with movements and being connected to nature and other women that were more awake as well, like more connected to themselves and practices and their bodies. Like I remember 5 years ago, 10 years ago, learning that women can feel when they ovulate. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? You feel when an egg bursts through your fallopian tube? Like how on earth can you feel your ovulation? And I have like 3 days of the month where I feel that I'm ovulating. Like just listening inwards, these subtle cycles.
Yeah, no, I can feel which side it's coming from.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I think that the journey of feeling myself, like, regular intentional practice of feeling yourself and being in your rhythm and your cycles and honoring your cycles and your own body, trains you to be like everything of what we're talking about. You know, like in a good relationship, knowing yourself, being able to say, "I do want a relationship," or I think I do because I want this, but I'm not ready because of these things. Like, people aren't really aware, I think, of how they actually feel. And so they think they want these things, but then when they experience them, they're like, oh, no, not that, which I think is a normal part of life as well, but feeling your body. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so another question from the Manosphere. So earlier I asked you guys about this. Is kind of a growing theory, having a daughter, thinking about how women have a version of nice guy syndrome where they're educated, culture educates you to be one way, it gives you a lot of validation, attention, even maybe success, but maybe not what a typical hetero guy, probably the type of guy you want to be with, the fallical guy, would choose in a partner. I realized like, this is the same thing that men go through. It's just a different type of thing. You spoke about getting in touch with your nature, you know? But part of this, and this is something I think is, I've been speaking about this with Nalaya, and she, it didn't really dawn on her that men kind of see women almost in two categories, kind of related to the Madonna whore complex, but there's also some like biological root, like the things that make you really want to sleep with a woman aren't the same thing that make you really want to commit. Mm. I was curious, what do you think?
Can you just elaborate briefly on what is it that modern culture is telling young women to be?
I think now, and this is obviously my slice of what I can observe, but I think I have something on the pulse. Obviously, everyone does, I guess. But being overtly sexual and independent and separate, not needing a man, not needing anybody. And it's not just women. I mean, all of globalist consumer society encourages us to be separate so we pay for more things. But also, I think specifically this does kind of like, you know, in the 90s, way back when, the big narrative around young women was, oh, they're being compared to unhealthy body images on magazines, right? Now it must be worse because you have women making their living on Instagram, OnlyFans, all of these kind of extreme things where the validation is higher. I could only imagine not only this affects body image issues, but the thing that I'm more addressing is men give a lot of attention to women in these situations, but they don't want to invest their vulnerable commitment, let's say, to such a woman. And
which sounds safe, right? If you don't want to be vulnerable and raw, like it's safer, no, to connect with someone who's kind of just for sex.
But not for like actually committing your life to someone.
Okay. But they want to. This is an example where, please.
I think what you're saying, so like there is a way that women are being taught to portray themselves, which is basically sexy to men, but that isn't the same thing that men are looking for when they start wanting to commit. So like women then just like they get this idea like you said overtly sexual, independent,
not needing
a man.
Yeah, independent basically.
Yeah. And so like when men come to the point where they want to start settling down with a woman, they're not going to find themselves attracted to the women who are this way. So they're women are receiving this message and they're doing that. And then when they come to settle down with someone, they're finding themselves rejected because of these qualities that have previously been seen as.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of this came to my attention initially because I have a lot of female friends who just wanted to sleep around for a while. And there's certain behaviors that that made their dating life really prolific. Like that, you know, they're beautiful, but they also got a lot of attention from men. But now they want to settle down and they're finding, oh, it's the opposite, which I think is the same thing as the nice guy thing. It's like, oh, that really sucks. And I only recently have thought about the female side of it. To be rewarded for one thing and then find out it's the opposite in a later stage of life, let's say.
Again, I think it just keeps going back to if someone's having a hard time dating or connecting to the kind of person they're looking for or getting the relationship that they are dreaming of and wishing for. I think again, the answer is just doing more inner work, knowing who you are and developing yourself. And when I say that, I mean an example of someone who has been sleeping around, really prolific in their dating life and enjoying it. Yeah. It's they're into it's consensual, but something shifted in them and they went to experience something else. I think maybe you have to go through some rounds of relationships and kind of clear away and recognize more and more clearly what you don't want and then really have a space for yourself where you crave and desire what you do want so that when you recognize it, there's you really want to hold on to it. You want to cherish it and put energy into that. Or I think also helpful is celibate, taking a breather and just putting energy. Because there's a lot of energy that goes into dating, whether it's just casual romantically or deep relationships. It's a lot of energy. So taking your energy back and focusing on your own projects, recognizing what do you love, diving into yourself in some way that that brings joy and self-connection and understanding, or, you know what I mean? Like finding something. And I think that develops someone in a deeper way that's then a really attractive partner, you know, for like a long-term relationship. And you can still be sexy, right? Like, I don't think it's about like, well, now you should just start dressing like Virgin Mary and speak and never use potty mouth, please and thank you. And I mean, yes, I think please. Yeah. Anyway, I think keeping like your, what you learned in your dating life in the sense of like, I like how this feels on my body. This feels good for me. This gives me pleasure, having that power and experience, but then recognizing like, for me, this is respectful. I'm seeking a respectful partnership. Like, what are you seeking in a partner? Because it's going to be different than casually going out. If you want deeper relationships, deeper connection, deeper communication, then evolve that with your friends. Like, recognize, yeah, you know, like, recognize what's deeper for you.
Definitely. I think there's always going to be a moment of uncomfortableness when you're shifting from one way of living to another way. So it sounds like it's a shift from, say, you're talking about a shift from dating a lot to wanting to settle down. So there's going to be this point where they meet, where you're starting to feel like you want to settle down, but your habits, you've grown them in that space where you were dating. So you still act like you did in the dating time, and you haven't learned what it is to be the woman you want to be when you want to settle down. And maybe you're talking about, or you're like talking to women in this stage where they don't even know who they are and starting to, yeah, who they are, or who they want to be, or what it really looks like to find someone that they're settling with. So they're probably still looking for people that they'll be dating, but trying to convert them into someone that they would settle down with. Mm-hmm. It would be one thing that they're doing, but also their thing, the ways that they're going about, the ways they do things, their habits come from before. So there's like, and then there's also asking himself, do I actually really want this? I don't know if I want this. They'll be going back and forth in this time. And like you say, like the more they look into themselves and find, actually, I really do want this, I feel like the shift will come naturally the more they look into themselves. But they do need to do the inner work, like look into themselves and ask themselves the questions and go deep, 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 look at their limiting, like core beliefs that may be like stopping them from going into that, to really, truly believe that they want that. Because you're going to have a point where you say, I think I want this, but you don't really know what it is. And then to get there is a lot of work. And it's probably the same with men. Just this.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I relate to both. I was sharing earlier that I couldn't connect with my wife when she was in commitment mode and I was in sleep around mode. But actually and then I also ended up in weird relationships and was trying to do both. I was screening women via lust, but then trying to fit someone in a box that didn't make sense. But actually the thing that worked, let's say, is celibacy. I did actually choose to be celibate for 6 months, and it kind of gave me a reset. And that's when I happened to reconnect with my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause I believe that there was something in you too, that you were cultivating like a space to cherish your relationship. Like when you take the space, it's like you're craving, like you recognize more clearly what it is that you desire. It actually changes the neural pathways of your brain to want to hold that. Like you can, there's more like receptors of, if you're desiring something, it can actually create brain patterns that you appreciate it more when it comes.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, oh, someone who wants something serious. Okay. Like,
yeah. I think I needed a clean slate too. Cause if we had somehow reconnected before I was celibate, I might've just said and did the things that I was used to doing the way I was just used to connecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, but I keep detracting from my own question, which was, do you find in yourselves have this kind of categorization that is common in men of Madonna whore? Like, if you meet a guy, are you thinking, this is too personal, we could also cut this, but like, this is someone to sleep with, like he's definitely a no for partnership, but or I'm going to GH here, or the opposite?
Please go for it.
Relating.
Let me see. So you're asking if, like, when we see a man, do we like kind of categorize him basically into like, yes, sleep worthy, or like, yes, marriage worthy, or neither?
Or something like that.
I think yes.
And your behaviors are different.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like I want to think about this more.
Sure.
I feel like you have something on the tip of your tongue.
Well, I'm laughing because I'm just living a really interesting version of reality in myself. I felt so clearly and so strongly I want a life partner. I want a father to my child, and then I had a father to my child. But then Yeah. And then the separation of that, I felt like, wow, I need to just enjoy my body, because that marriage led to like a lack of intimacy for, I think, a year, 2 years, something, a long period of time of just being like this dryness of not the dryness is the opposite of juiciness of the connection. And then upon like the separation, it was like, wow, let me just enjoy my body and like connecting with someone in a respectful way with like clear boundaries. But so I was not seeking to go emotionally deep. It was sort of like a self-loving practice for me to just welcome like nourishing, like, I like to have one nourishing lover that isn't going, that I'm not looking for as a partner. It's funny to hear myself say that, because I thought I was so clear in wanting like a solid life partner, but needing like an oat cleansing and
cut to oats.
But yeah, like that was nourishing. And then, you know, you eat oats first, then you have your bowl, and like there's a
cinnamon on top.
Yes. Yeah. Soak the nuts, like no, because sprouted nuts on your own meal. So yes, thank you.
But someone's following. Like, okay.
He's like, help.
I have to add animations to make this make sense. All right.
And now, like this last year or two, I feel really clear in wanting a solid partnership, because I've experienced traveling and just living in this gypsy mode was really deep relationships, but brief, you know? So it really wasn't, I'm finding my partner. Although I think I always carried that seeking to build a family in me, but my goals and motivations were more of like self-discovery. And so traveling the world, but still having like kind of nourishing my sensuality and my connection to myself, which I think that sex and sensuality, you know, connecting with another person, I very much believe can be a self-discovery journey, you know, like knowing yourself and what feels right, what doesn't feel right, like what feels respectful, like self-worth and where I want my energy to go. You know, okay, I share in this way, but actually I need a lot of energy for me in this way. So yeah, present, that's weird. Literally, it was like 2 weeks ago. I'm like, you know what? I'm actually done seeking relationships. I need to focus on my own like business and self sustainability. And it's weird because in that time, then someone just pops up and it's like, oh, were you not seeking a relationship? Because here's the perfect one. So yes, I don't think I answered your question, but I got lost.
Great, it was interesting. Do you feel, and again, if it's too personal, we can cut it. Do you feel like this is a test from the universe of whether or not you're going to commit to your business or now that you're not seeking, you got what
yes,
you want?
Yes, because I'm still committed to my business. And I think I had to reach that point of like, no, I'm not distracting my energy. I'm here with this. And I'm really not like prioritizing seeking a partner. In fact, I'm going to bring my energy back. I'm not going to put energy into that. And then someone just kind of popped out into ether that really is ticking the boxes in beautiful ways. And I'm like, this is fascinating. Let's see what unfolds.
Cool.
Yeah. But I think I generally feel I'm seeking partner, and that's what I'm filtering for. And so when someone feels like childy or like they haven't really fully gotten this in themselves, you know, the fallical, like, I keep using this word and the gesture, but for me, it very much is like, I'm solid. I'm centered in myself. I know myself. I know what I want. And that to me makes someone like a man, even if someone has really interesting life experiences, they're eloquent, they're super cool. They really know women's bodies in a very beautiful, respectful and fun way. If they don't have that, like, there's not.
But a non-phallical man with all those other qualities can make a great lover.
Yes. Yes.
Are you saying that with those gestures because you're embarrassed that it's true? Or you're just, like, realizing it? What's the meaning of that shrug?
I do appreciate. So I, for, like, a year and a half, I've had a lover on and off in my life, one person. And it's very clear I don't want a relationship with this person. Like, maybe there were moments in the far past where I was like, maybe, but then I was like, no, they don't have that ability to show up in the way that I would feel really safe in building a family with them. Like, I really need this like reliability, consistency. The way he shows up, it feels really good and cool, you know, like not just as a lover, but very good friends. But to be a solid human by my side, like two pillars of the temple, he doesn't have that. But I do keep him around because of this experience of really nourishing my own sensuality, like having another person outside of me give me that, you know, bi-monthly or so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is like my mother listening?
Well, I think it's just very, very valuable information for men to hear that, because I'm thinking about, like, in the manosphere, a lot of the advice givers don't have female friends.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is theory. And because of that, I think a lot of the misogyny, say, laid on the pickup artists of 10, 15 years ago really came from the fact that the advice givers had no female friends and didn't know how female behaved, how women behaved outside of the bedroom.
Yeah.
Right? It's like they just really didn't know.
That's
but I think it's interesting to hear of, like, okay, so a young man acting like, you know, the modern term is fuckboy, maybe is actually honest advertising if that's what he wants.
Yeah.
Because then he doesn't lead someone on into thinking he's relationship. It's like just very clear, that's not what I'm here for.
And that's when, like, this lovership experience with this other person really became something more deeply respectful and solid, because we both knew what we were here to share.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a love within that. It doesn't have to be this like loveless, cold, I don't know what people go through. Like the idea of one night stands I've never experienced. So I don't know what that looks like, but it feels like something where you feel bad the next day, you know? But I feel really happy the next day. And I'm like, my body feels good. Like there's so much healing benefits in sharing sexual connections with someone. And I think a benefit of that could be just like really learning yourself and feeling safe. Like it needs to feel safe. It doesn't matter if it's like a permanent relationship or like, or an exploration with someone, but it needs to feel safe. And so if it's a fuckboy, that's like, I'm here to be your best fuckboy ever. I'm going to cherish you like a queen for this night. Or, you know, it's like people are into that too, you know, but don't misrepresent, because
exactly.
That can really hurt people.
It's all about, so you say like one of the benefits could be like knowing yourself better, but I think also you need to start from knowing yourself well and knowing what you want at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you're openly communicating that, you're gonna, like, people, you're gonna attract the people who want that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're like not being fully honest about like this, I only want this, then people are gonna think, maybe they're not gonna know what you want and where you can meet them. So ultimately it's about like communication, like whether it be from like words or otherwise, like communicating, like this is where I'm at. This is what I want. But then before you do that, you need to know that that's what you want. Like if you think you want a relationship, but then you find yourself constantly like having like shorter term things and then like not enjoying it or not feeling safe and like coming out of it, look at yourself and say, actually, what I really want is to just have short term, mostly fun things, and then communicate that.
Mm-hmm.
So like all of it's good. Like everybody wants different things at different times and different people like all over the world. No, there isn't just like one type of woman looking for one type of man. So as long as you understand what you want and what you're looking for and then communicate with that, communicate
yes.
about that, then the people will match that, you know?
Yes.
People want fuckboys. People want to be married. People want things in between. People want to be able to connect with like multiple people at the same time, like different relationships at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess what I hope as far as I'm thinking specifically young people growing up is knowing what kind of mode of behavior is for what. Like thinking nice guy behavior is going to attract a woman. No. Thinking that like certain kinds of behavior is going to attract commitment. No, but it's great for other things. And if you know A leads to B and not something else, then you have the right map for the world.
I think the essence of the character trait to be like the pillar of oneself is to be in integrity. Integrity comes from the word integral, like of wholeness, you know, and that, I love what you said about you can be all these different things and there's someone for you. Like you can, you know, if you're clear and honest, you'll connect with someone clear and honest, also looking for the form of connection. Even when you're not sure, you can go out there in the world. That's why there's that option on Bumble. You can even say, unsure. I don't know exactly. Do I want a long-term marriage or do I want to just casual dating? I don't know yet. Like I'm going to just meet people and see. And there's some people that might be like, I'm open for that too. Let's see what this is. Let's have like a non-committal, no expectation experience and see how it feels for us. And that's beautiful. Or they're like, well, I know very clearly what I want. Or I know very clearly, I just want to be like totally casual, but maybe that evolves along the way. And if you're really drawn to someone and they only want casual and you are not sure what you want, maybe you want to date long-term, but you feel like, wow, I really want to connect with this person and they're honest with you, then you might still be like, you know, and this goes for men being like, I'm not sure what I want. I'm meeting someone who wants a relationship. Should I be honest with them? Yes. Because if you're honest, like And the person's like, well, I want a relationship, but I'm intrigued to keep connecting with you. Like, and we can just check in along the way. Like, I've been on the other side of that. I've experienced that. I think just being really honest is so powerful. It just makes relationships and however you're relating in integrity. Like, people are consciously, consensually making decisions to connect, and it's good. You know,
And it saves a lot of energy rather than, what does she think that I want? Or should
they, God.
You know? Yes, that's slimy.
Yeah. Problem. And also, hang on, something you said. Also not being attached to the outcome, that's super important. Like, that's where it kind of gets tricky. If someone's saying to themselves, I really specifically want this, and this person fits this, it must be this with them.
Yes. Right.
Then it
scarcity.
Gets really hard. Yes. Yeah, it's like
scary rejection.
Exactly. So someone might be scared that if I tell them I just want to play around and they're like, actually, I really want to have a relationship, it's not going to work. Like, that moment can be really hard unless you're like, that's fine. That's okay. Like, if you're okay with yourself because you're working on yourself, you're like, great. We don't match. There's so many other people and I'm fine by myself. Like, I'm fine in who I am.
Yeah.
And I have friends and family and just, I don't know. That's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say.
And I own fluffy socks to come home to, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I totally agree. And I just thought of like another devil's advocate kind of point, right? Like, it's important, obviously, to not be in scarcity and cling to someone that does, and then fake your behavior, or mold yourself to fit them. But then there's also something I think is true in recent modern dating with Tinder and the assumption of like a million people. Like, I've been speaking to guys on this, like, once upon a time in human history, a man might meet 100 women in his life. So he would think, okay, there's 100 women in his adolescence. He would maybe chase everything, but he would meet someone who fit him, and that was his woman, because he's going to be dead by 40. So he's kind of like, you know. Whereas now, and I do think this kind of drives maybe like more boyish behavior in men specifically. Maybe it relates to women. I don't know. Where you think you're going to live forever in a sense. You're acting like you're going to live forever. I know a lot of guys in their 40s, you know, they're acting like they're much younger. Not to say there's a way you have to act at a certain age, but it's almost like you're comparing yourself to or looking at the pool of a billion women in the world rather than, you get what I'm saying? It's like paradox of choice of like, oh, there's always someone who's even more perfect and more comfortable versus the opposite of, say, the arranged marriage or like the prairie marriage is like, all right, I'm going to meet 5 women. I better pick one. She's the best one. Let me make this work.
Such strong feelings about this.
But it has to come with a gesture if you're going to share your feelings.
It's building.
Let it flow. Let it flow.
Well, let me think. Where do we approach this from? Like, oh God, these things, they, it's true though. They come up and then they just, I can't tell you the beautiful poetry I've been sent and the promises I've been given and the amount of like love and energy and storytelling. Gorgeous, enormous castles made of sand. And then like a wave or two come over and it's like, well, that was a thing. Like, and I'm just like, are you kidding? Let's face this. Let's learn what works for us, our communication style. Let's work on ourselves. Like, is that too much energy for you from me? Like, I can let me know where it lies for like processing things together. And how much do I process on my own? Because I can, and I'm willing to, I need to know boundaries. Like, people need to know their own boundaries and not just assume that, okay, you need to fit me perfectly. Otherwise, this doesn't work. Like, no, I know myself perfectly, or I'm working on learning myself perfectly and feeling it out with you along the way. And I'm committed to being honest with myself and with you about feelings that come up and move through me. Or, you know, like if I need space or if I need more affection, like instead of just being like, he's not holding me enough, it's better to be like, hey, can you cuddle me? Like, I would love to be cuddled right now. Instead of like assuming people are supposed to do one thing and that they don't, it's like, he should have known that. Another asshole, or like, oh, such a man thing. Like, we gotta let people know what we need. And so I've just seen it. I felt it. I've experienced it. I've lived it so many times. These like gorgeous sandcastles and the waves coming. And I think that the middle ground between like arranged marriages where you're locked in and like 13-year-olds are married off to someone, like versus like, you know, we live in a sea of a million fish and just stick with that mentality and you'll find someone eventually because they're out there. Like, no, if you meet someone and I do think there's a breaking point of like, look, we've really tried and it truly is not for the right vibration. It's not clicking. We don't have a communication style that we've found together. Like, I think it's, you know, I think if you really give it a good go, and for me, a good go has higher, a greater journey of unfolding than I think most people in society, which is very frustrating because I go down these paths and they're like, oh my God, I've never felt such feelings in my life and myself. And then we start living an experience and they're just like, whoa, like, I don't know how to deal with it. It's like, come on, this is time to grow. Like, do you know what it's like to have children? Like, that it takes so much endurance to go through a week of them being sick, you know, like there's so much you go through to have, it's life. Like, life takes work, energy, care, commitment, focus, dedication, love, presence, self. It's just, and I think relationships give an opportunity to live that depth of human experience. But
yeah. Well, hearing you say that, I think of like my side where, you know, I was really not confident and not successful and in that category that gets disqualified. And it, you know, I think most men have to like kind of earn their way to having success. And like, you know, you kind of cherish the struggle if you're a man who's been on that journey, which I think is most men. And for myself, I've kind of been romantic. So I've gone into interactions with women being genuinely romantic, wanting to express affection in whatever ways. But then along the way, maybe something is like, oh, well, she's not long-term material. I kind of just, she switches categories, but then I keep going because all of the other things are fun, which I don't think is necessarily the kindest or authentic thing to do. But it wasn't like I meant to. It's like, well, I was going in that direction. Oh, but she's not the princess I thought, but this is still fun. So I'm just going to keep going. And then it'll fizzle out when it fizzles out. And yeah, it's just interesting to hear the other side of it.
Yeah. I think empowered women, I believe empowered women spark something in the man. I think it just sparks something. And it's like, you're going to, I don't know. Have you heard of women who run with the wolves?
Of course.
I'm so glad to hear that. So there's this energy of skeleton woman. It's this archetype. It's this essence of life, death, life, and all relationships. Everything alive goes through life, death, and life. Like the cycles of rebirth and growth and attrition.
I'm just checking the time because you have to go.
Are we good?
No, we can keep going, but you have to go by 5.
Like 5:15.
Okay, great. Carry on. Okay. Life, death, life.
Life, death, life. I think that inevitably relationships that have like the sense of integrity and like self-knowing and like this liveliness, sense of wild, like connection with their nature will awaken. Like it has to go through. It's not just like a heightened state of pleasure or always joy or always getting along. It's like, I don't know. It's feeling the waves of life moving through. So I think it can be challenging if someone hasn't been facing that.
Are you going to say something?
No.
Okay. I just find it's like the reason why I brought up the journey of a man, I'll say for myself, but again, most men, it's like, I do think there's some kind of maybe past scarcity. It's like, I brought this up in a YouTube video. Like if you were starved as a kid, you have maybe a need for extra food or you want extra food in the fridge, just for a simple analogy. And I think for men who didn't get the validation from women they wanted when they're young and they finally have abundance in their life, like they finally have options, there's almost like, why should I settle for anything less than absolutely a perfect fit? Which I recognize in myself because there's always this tension in me because that has been my experience where then it's like, well, why should I put up with this inconvenience or discomfort when there's probably a woman with these same attributes that is easier? And why don't I deserve it? Because I had to earn my way here. And I noticed this tension. And I think almost all of my guy friends feel the same way, regardless whether single or not. Like there's kind of this feeling of like, well, I earned it. Why do I should have something easier.
That's really interesting when you say that.
Yeah, I haven't had anything like it before.
I think it's different for women because at least when it comes to initial validation for men, I'm assuming by the time you hit puberty, you're getting... You were just attracted
too much of it. Even.
Too much, too much. And if anything, you wanted less.
Yeah.
Whereas most guys, except for maybe the top of the pack, like the really good looking, perfectly emotionally secure guys didn't. And they're probably more like women.
Well, I didn't even know what to do with this.
Hearing you say that, oh, I think it could be easier. So I think I should just make it easier. Like, go on to the next one because I've earned my way to like feel, but this essence of like, I want it to be easier. This is what I feel like I faced, is that people are looking for relationships that feel easy. But I think that if you're open to the journey unfolding of a deep connection, because this is a very important point, intimacy brings up wounds. Like whether it's bringing up the wound of scarcity as a child, or like there's literally something inside of us that we feel like we're dying if something and someone that we love is pushing us away, or if, or even overly, I know, we're like, yeah, it hurts. Or even like overly like smothering. It's like, there's literally something from being children and babies, like that we feel like we're dying if we're feeling abandoned or smothered. And it's just very visceral. And like, I think it's good to acknowledge that it exists. But instead of working through that, staying solid in a committed relationship, if it's something you've agreed that you want and you're on that path and you agree to yourself, like stay committed to your own integrity and keep going with it and find the ways that, yeah, find a healthy path forward.
I need to say that there's different ways to frame it. I mean, I was taking, I guess maybe I was jumping in on your perspective, like, okay, the guy wants it easier, which is true. Mm-hmm. But then there's also speaking about the relationships where I've been in the most trouble, where I thought, okay, before I decided I want a relationship, I was always the one leaving. I was being the avoidant one. And I had this idea like, oh, well, all I need to do for a good relationship is to not leave. So I ended up in, and then, you know, taking this mindset, which I think I've had this reflected to me by many women of like, oh, part of growing up as a man is like dealing with the difficulties of intimacy. But there's also a trap there of like pushing through in relationships that don't work.
Recognizing that.
And it's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, self-accountability, knowing your own shit and working with it, and or just being like, oh, this triggers my shit. I got it. Because, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. I don't think people should stick through like abuse and things, you know. I think we should have like dignity and integrity towards ourselves as well. Like not just integrity, I'm going to stay through a relationship because that's what my forefathers did, but also like, yeah.
Yeah.
Self-awareness of like, I have this tendency in me and this is not healthy for this relationship. Like I need to work on myself and not just being like, you take it out on me. Like it's your fault that I feel like this versus, wow, this is, yeah. It's an opportunity to become more self-aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think attachment theory is like a really great model for this in that, you know, I'm thinking of every time I broke up with someone, but also maybe every time an avoidant man leaves an anxious woman, she's maybe running the narrative, you're not grown up enough, you're not mature enough to deal with the difficulty of intimacy, and he's running the narrative, you're not right for me, or you're smothering me, or you're crazy, right? Mm. And they're both right and both wrong, kind of. Whereas, like, the secure people kind of just fit, ideally. You know, no one's perfectly secure, I guess.
Like, it just comes down to, like, working on yourself, really. Mm-hmm. Like, knowing yourself and knowing your triggers and, like, being able to, like, say them to the person, like, okay, like, this is something that's particularly difficult for me to listen to or to hear, to live through. Like, and asking them to, like, kind of have a bit of space for that. But I think it really requires what you're saying, like, this idea of kind of, well, like you were saying too, of trying to be there at least a little bit. But you both need to know yourselves to be able to, help the other person understand you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something I say to guys also who are, like, in the middle of this is, like, you really... To both of your points, like you need to be honest with yourself first. Like if you really don't want the relationship, don't let yourself be guilted into it because that's okay to not want a relationship. It's kind of like, it's one of these cultural things that I think men feel pressure about sometimes.
Wow, it's a real thing. They feel guilted into relationships.
Yeah, all the time. All of my relationships, I hope my exes don't see this, but all of my relationships except for this one, I was guilted into. There's someone I just wanted to hang out with and maybe sleep with and have a good time. And then I felt bad or maybe I was, my masculinity was challenged of like, oh, if you were a real man, you would grow up and recognize how much you want to be with me. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe you're right. And sometimes,
not sometimes
every relationship.
Wow.
Yeah. All of my exes, you are wonderful people.
He hates you all.
No, but like, if I really, you know, the responsibility is on me and that I wasn't really strong enough in myself to recognize that's not true. And, you know, I think it is like a thing that men, I don't know if it goes the other way, but men dating women is recognizing sometimes the most respectful thing is to say no.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
Because when you know the no is going to make her feel bad and you're feeling bad because she feels bad, sometimes you give the fake yes.
Totally. I feel like I've had this experience of like not guilted, but I feel like I've, a lot of the relationships that I've ended up in have been because, well, like monogamous relationships have been because like they've wanted me to be their girlfriend. So I don't think it's a like solely mass, like male experience. Like I've had that experience a lot where I've been connecting with guys and like, this is lovely. I've been like, we've been getting closer. Like when I was younger, I would ask like, can we keep this open? And like most of the time they were like, no, I don't want to. Like, damn it, guess I'll be your girlfriend then. And I end up being people's girlfriends. Mm-hmm. Where actually what I just want is just without the labeling, I suppose. So just enjoying the person. So it's interesting to hear like you say that from your experience. Like a lot of times I think I had that too.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I think I asked all the questions from the manosphere. This has been great. Well, thanks guys. This was super fun.